But anyway, thanks again for everyone that showed up today. Today I want to talk a little bit about some invertebrate data that we've been gathering as part of another larger project related to the ecology of a disease. With my co-authors Molly McIntosh and Ryan Kimberoskis back there in Rich Merritt's lab. And it's essentially funded by NIH and a couple of other nonprofit organizations, and a new third nonprofit organization has recently at least indicated they're going to provide additional resources for this large project. And it's also part of a large collaboration with U.S. institutions, some Ghanaian institutions, and the World Health Organization. And so it's not an invertebrate ecology project per se, but the invertebrate ecology is incredibly important to the overall system. And that's why are we studying invertebrates in West Africa, Ghana in particular. And it has to do with this disease called Brulee ulcer disease, a debilitating skin disease that affects mostly children in West Africa. It's rapidly emerging since the late 70s, early 80s, and they're trying to figure out why it's rapidly emerging. But there's another problem with that. They don't know how people are getting it. And so part of the reason Rich was initially contacted by the World Health Organization was that we know that the disease is associated with aquatic communities, low-lying areas, primarily disturbed by certain landscape characteristics, all very anecdotal. Nothing's been measured with this. But it is associated with aquatic communities. Why and how? We're trying to figure out. And so Rich was approached when some laboratory studies suggested that biting hemipterans might be transmitting the pathogen. We've kind of dismissed that. We've collected a lot of good data, and it doesn't look like biting hemipterans, at least in the field, are major vectors. But other hypotheses have come up, such as mosquitoes. Some Australian group is looking at mosquitoes. Also, direct water contact with the waters and water themselves, and is the pathogen booming and busting in the waters, and is this due to certain ecological connections and interactions? Recently, we found that the pathogen is in groundwater as well, and so this brings up the question, is there a groundwater-surface water exchange that is happening in these areas? And I can't go into it, but it might be going that way. And ultimately, hydroperiod might be important to this disease. And we're not sure how and why, because we don't know how people get it. So we're trying to figure out these things. But all of these are related in some way to aquatic insects and what might be affecting aquatic insects and other invertebrates. So our approach has been with this disease to assess what are the landscape changes that are occurring that might be influencing water bodies that people are using on a routine basis, and what are the local processes, land use processes, that might be impacting the biological communities and affecting the pathogen in these communities. The original hypothesis was that it was changing biological communities, the invertebrate communities, in a way that initially allowed for the populations of the potential vector to boom. Pretty sure it's not this vector anymore, but are these landscape changes local processes affecting invertebrate community structure? Then ultimately, however they're getting the disease, we know that the populations are on rise, and so they're continually modifying their environment, their landscape, and is this leading to the rapid increase in the disease? Furthermore, could climate be playing a factor in interacting with landscape change to affect these dynamics? So the study questions today are essentially, we don't know a lot about the community structure in Ghana or West Africa. So what are the invertebrate community structures there? Do they vary over large spatial scales? Do they vary locally within local areas and in regions in a particular country, for instance? And then what are the related environmental factors that might be impacting these communities? The other big question is why or how are landscape vectors associated with invertebrates? So the premise of our hypothesis is that landscape factors are having an impact on the biological communities. No one's ever measured it. No one's ever tried to quantify it. So first we need to know, what are the land use land cover characteristics in Ghana? Are there relationships with the invertebrate communities? Basic questions. What's the appropriate spatial scale which to evaluate these potential relationships? And so I'm going to talk a little bit about these particular questions in this talk. Our study area is Ghana, primarily three major regions in southern Ghana, Ashanti, Accra, and Volta. And you can see here, this is where you find Where you do not find cases is in Volta. The other two regions, you have mixes of villages with and without cases. And so we initially thought there should be a region effect on the invertebrate communities if they are important to the disease. And or could they just be indicators of conditions necessary for the disease to emerge in a village? So at first we really thought maybe there's regional processes going on. No information, so part of understanding the parameters that will ultimately go in larger mathematical models down the line when we get all these variables analyzed, we just need to know the underlying structure of the invertebrate communities, potentially what's driving them, and is it similar to temperate regions? So this is a digital elevation model map just to indicate how we went about attempting to identify the appropriate spatial scale to look at these. So these are our villages in the three regions. And what we did was look at the land use land cover, not in ellipticals, but full circles, buffers around each village, at different spatial scales. And I only represent two here, but we looked at seven. And we wanted to know what spatial scale, based on the limitation of our satellite imagery, might be the most important for looking at landscape changes, or landscape and invertebrate community structure. We were using Landsat ETML Plus satellite images, giving us a spatial resolution of 30 square meters. These were the original unsupervised classification of this imagery. And you can see where our sites plot within southern Ghana and some of the major patches of forest that you can see in relation to some of our sites. When you look at about a 50, I think this is now 20 square kilometer image, this is essentially what you get. And so if you have a village here, what we were interested in is what spatial scale of land use is most important to perhaps predicting invertebrate community structure. But of course you have to collect the insects. And so lots of people have been involved in very serious compromising conditions sometimes in the field in West Africa, which I know several people have worked there. We looked at 98 sites in these three regions over a period of 3 years. We took macroinvertebrate samples from quadrats that were identified and placed into the dominant macrophyte cover. We also took some water chemistry and water quality characteristics. At each site, whether it was a running water or lentic habitat, we put two transects through the dominant macrophytes. If it was a river, we would basically put two transects adjacent to one another. Pretty difficult to get through some of these rivers and some of the, even the streams in some of these areas. And essentially we took four quadrats, made one composite sample for each of those 98 sites. The analyses that I'm going to be talking about, it's been quite a few of them. I've used non-metric multi-dimensional scaling to assess the invertebrate structural matrices. So basically trying to understand how the invertebrates are structured, and I've identified two axes for that. I use classification, basically regression tree analyses, to build larger models to one, identify the correct spatial scale that landscape may be impacting invertebrate community structure, but then later on to build a final model after using PCA to take down some of those landscape variables into more manageable variables. And then incorporating those PCA principal components into multiple regressions to predict the invertebrate communities based upon the NMDS axes. And then some things I did actually just in the last few days, looked at some water quality correlations with the residuals from these multiple regressions. And so the approach was we initially had seven buffers, kind of arbitrarily defined, based in somewhat on the resolution of the Landsat imagery. So we wanted to reduce that down to what's the most appropriate scale. And we also reduced the original 22 unsupervised classified land use characteristics to 12. And we basically just combined those that were relatively redundant. When I ran my first regression tree, predicting the axes from the non-metric multidimensional scaling of the invertebrate communities, we identified that 1, 5, and 10 kilometer scales were best explaining the variation in the invertebrate communities initially, just land use characteristics alone. So these are the best scales to identify any relationships if they exist. So what were those results? Well, if you take all regions together, so you don't look at it in terms of regional differences, and you just look at the spatial scale changes, basically they're the same. Really you can use 1K, 5K, or 10K looking at these analyses, and I've done that for representative purposes in this talk. But if you look at regional differences, so you look at Accra versus Ashanti, which is versus Volta, we thought there would be enough variation there to pull out regional differences in community structure. You can see that in Accra, your mixed urban and cropland is most dominant. There's almost none in Ashanti and Volta. And you notice in Ashanti and Volta, that's essentially balanced by more forested land cover in those areas. And Ashanti has a little more mixed cropland and shrubland, which actually comes out later on in a PCA is the dominant land use principal component. And there is no changes between the two spatial scales. There should be, I copied and pasted wrong into this graph and then uploaded the presentation. There should be forest right here in Ashanti, very similar to this 10K spatial scale. So there's really no difference among spatial scales. However, I kept analyzing the spatial scale separately just to make sure. These tables don't get lost in all of the numbers. This is just the PCA, so identified four principal components at each spatial scale that were significant in terms of collapsing the land use land cover variables. We went from 12 to essentially 4. And then I'm going to use these principal components in multiple regression analyses to identify those variables that are most important in predicting invertebrate community structure. So what do the invertebrates look like? Well, surprisingly, when you run NMDS and you identify your two axes that collectively make up about 60% of the variation in the invertebrate structure, you add a third one, you make up 75%. There is no separation of regions, which we were kind of surprised about. So basically, they look kind of similar everywhere. However, remember, we were driven in terms of the disease aspect to go to certain villages where we knew cases were at, trying to find cases where we knew it definitely wasn't at. And so we had to sample multiple water body types. And so when we did this, we found that there's a major effect, basically driven by the axis 2 in the invertebrates, that you have lentic habitats and higher scores, ordination scores on that axis 2, and more low-tick habitats here represented by the open circles. And so, major water body consideration that we have to incorporate into these future mathematical models. But let's explore this a little bit further. When I did run those multiple regressions, taking those land use, land cover, principal components as the independent variables, and taking the axes, those two axes, as the response variables in multiple regression analysis, basically the first two principal components of landscape we're making up most of the variation in the principal components. They kind of fall out, but really only one falls out in those multiple regressions. You get significant but weak, only an R squared of 0.23 from these multiple regressions, where landscape is actually predicting or demonstrating a relationship with the invertebrate communities for that first axis from the NMDS and for the second one. This last principal component, this is basically bare soil. PC2 is driven by dominant cropland with some shrubland, savanna mix in the landscape. And I'm only giving one buffer zone because this is the same for the 5K and the 10K buffer zones as well. So basically one principal component is kind of driving the predictions on the invertebrate communities. After that, I ran another regression tree just to see and confirm what that multiple regression might have been saying. And so I included region just to make sure, because regression trees incorporate, it's a non-parametric approach. If you're not familiar, I can talk to you about this afterwards, but it incorporates all your variables. It's non-parametric. It partitions your data set out as you predict one variable by all of your independent variables. And it's a very robust technique. And basically what it demonstrated was it was predicting 32 to 37% of the variation in the invertebrates, basically trying to explain those two axes from the non-metric multi-dimensional scaling. So we were getting about 20% with the multiple regression. You include it into a cart, you get that up to about 32 to 37%, which is still not much. And so what I did with the multiple regression results is that I took the residuals from that principal component from the landscape, the principal components from the landscape, regressing the non-metric multidimensional scaling scores, took the residuals, so the variation that's not explained, and I calculated some water quality principal components and then ran correlations with those with the residuals. And what we found was the principal component of water quality was principal component two, which represented low dissolved oxygen, increasing iron, and increasing magnesium, were all correlated with both axes, all three spatial scales. So what might be happening is there are landscape there are landscape factors, but there's probably local factors related to water quality that's driving some of these invertebrate communities. Nothing new, but new to Ghana, I think, at least the water bodies that we study. I finally ran the final models, and I included, once again, region. I put soil, water type, we knew was going to be important. All of the land use, land cover categories, not principal components, but the categories themselves. And then we tried to predict both of those axes. In these models, region and soil never were considered. Region's certainly not a factor, soil's not a factor. And we started to explain 42 to 47%. Now, when you look at the models, without putting it up there and trying to go through all the steps, basically the same land use, land cover variables that were demonstrated in the principal components and demonstrated to be in effect in the principal component two and driving the invertebrate community structures are the same ones that fall out independently in the regression tree analysis. And what we ultimately see are that water body type is the most important, the first variable that comes out in the regression trees. Water quality variables, you know, then the land use land cover variables, and then within water body type, then within land use land cover variables, then you have your water quality variables again. So this is incredibly important for our disease system because we have to understand our underlying interactions and relationships. So what's the bottom line here? Cropland and mixed cropland and shrubland is the best predictor of invertebrates. However, it somewhat depends on scale. I'll talk a little bit about the limitations to our satellite imagery. Region's not important, but water type is very important. Within that, certain water body types are being influenced by certain, primarily cropland and mixed shrubland, driving certain water body types, probably through water quality conditions. And then there's local human factor, which there's lots of problems there. But does this represent intensified land use over the last 25 to 30 years? We're not sure yet. We're looking at ways to measure landscape change using satellite imagery. One, we're using coarse data, 30 square meter resolution for a Landsat, unsupervised up until last October, where we made a huge effort to do some ground truthing, and we're in the process of refining and calculating how accurate we've been. But we're also gathering high resolution satellite imagery to get about 1 square meter resolution. To identify what types of agriculture might be important, is it truly agriculture in some of these areas? Remember, it was unsupervised. What are the arrangements of forests in these areas? Are they small patches? Are they long strips? This becomes a question. We have a master's student working on this now in Michigan State. And then are these really forests? Some of these areas, you have teak, you have cocoa. They look like forests probably from the air, except oftentimes they have 90 degree angles to their plots. But we're going to identify some of these things. And the last thing, I don't know about you guys, but some of our sites have crocodiles that make invertebrate sampling a bit, I don't know, contentious to some people. Tremendous effort from our Ghanaian colleagues. There's been tons and many underclassmen, undergraduates working on this. Good technician and our two disease people, pathogen microbiology people at University of Tennessee. So I'd be happy to entertain any questions for the next 20 minutes. Thank you. Didn't understand it, did you?
Is that disease lethal?
It can be, but it's really rare. It often leads to amputation if it's not treated, and there's a lot of social stigma about getting treatment because many of the indigenous peoples think that it's related to witchcraft. And so if you get it, you don't want people to know that you have it. So then you don't seek treatment, and it ultimately can end up with amputations. And then people will die, but it's usually through secondary infections.
Going, as Eric said, they choose witchcraft as a way to get it taken.
18 is the same age that you get maximum schistosomiasis too. And they related that to hygiene, especially among the boys. Low hygiene.
Yeah,
exact same pattern.
Yeah, that's interesting. They tried to tie in the schisto with the borreliosis in terms of, is there any relation? They tried it with HIV, but there doesn't seem to be any correlation. But most of all the water bodies we work in are schisto.
A lot of them. And we are trying to evaluate hygiene as a possible covariate in a lot of this, because some of the water quality variables suggest that it's incredible eutrophication, either from local farming in the flood zones of some of these areas, and or open defecation and runoff from sanitation issues like that. Which,
was I right in concluding that it's the type of water body, loaded versus benthic, and then nested within that is water quality surrounding features as your biggest predictor?
Yes, and so trying to identify those higher resolution landscape uses, say within 100 meters, which I think is very important. I think that's going to be telling and driving the water quality characteristics that drive the invertebrate communities and the pathogen.
In the Water Resources Institute in Crop, they have 30 years of running water data.
Yes.
That would be very useful.
We've been trying to get some of that. Our collaborators, there's issues, but most of it is water, running water, and a lot of our sites are standing water. And so we've been. Do you know of any other databases for standing water? It's tough to come by. But no, that's a really good point. We should try to find some of those. I'm glad you brought that up. Ryan Kimbarauskas and Molly McIntosh will be speaking on Wednesday afternoon, relating it all to the disease. This is the underlying structure to it. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. All right, thank you.